We are going to call to order, even though we have a couple of people still coming in that are signing in. We are going to go ahead and get this meeting started. And I want to first welcome you to the West Lafayette Community School Corporation Special Meeting Board of School Trustees. Today is Wednesday, July 22nd. It's 6:37 p.m. And I need approval of the agenda, please.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Marley.
Second.
Second by Tom Schott. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Motion carries. We'll move now onto new business and reopening plan revisions. And Dr. Killian.
Thank you, Mr. Karpik. Appreciate everyone being out. And here we are again. As I said, July 8th, I believe many times this is a fluid situation. I think I also said many times July 8th that what was true July 8th probably would not be true July 22nd. I didn't give a date, but it wouldn't be true a couple of weeks later. So here we are. As I think most people have heard, additional guidance mandates from the state, as that has changed as of today. So those are, this is a fluid situation, and I want to continue to remind people that we are in a process unlike anything that any school districts ever had to go through. So we are doing the best we can with the information that we have and the resources we have. So as I said, July 8th, one of the things we needed to do was gather data, try to figure out how many students wanted online, how many students wanted e-learning. And just to give a little clarification, because some people are getting confused about virtual, continuous learning versus e-learning. Virtual continuous learning is basically a qualification given to us by the Department of Education for students that have a qualifying medical event or a home life situation, and we have medical documentation. So that could be special education, that could be a 504, that could be a variety of things. And so people have asked, what's the difference between virtual and e-learning? Virtual might have some modifications because we might have a student with an IEP. Virtual could have some modifications because of a 504. So the e-learning platform might be a little different with regards to the services that we offer students based upon the medical qualifications. The e-learning piece, as we've heard from several parents last time requesting e-learning, would be for those that would not have a qualifying medical event. So the e-learning would be, if you will, your typical core classes and those things that we can offer through the proper staffing. Now, most important about all of this is everyone needs to understand 2 points. One, our priority is making sure that all of our high school students have the graduate or the credit courses they need to graduate. That's very, very important because we cannot allow any of our students to go through the high school this coming year and not have the credit courses that they need to move through graduation. Second piece of it is we have a lot of contractual obligations. And one of those contractual obligations is working with our teachers association. And so we are required in a reopening plan to have discussions with our teachers. We're required to have meaningful input. And as I continue to say, I cannot ask teachers to do on-site instruction all day and then do e-learning at night. But it is our intent, to the best of our ability, as we move forward, and if the board approves this tonight, with our e-learning platform, to utilize as many West Lafayette teachers as we can through a variety of discussable items that I've already gone through with the Teachers Association. So what might some of those items look like? Extended contract, volunteers. When we know how many students have registered for on-site versus online, looking for teachers that have a qualifying event where they would want to do e-learning. I've reached out to over 40 West Lafayette retired teachers to try to see how many people would be interested. So we are working to get a pool of teachers to make sure that once registration is over, then we move to scheduling. And once scheduling is over, we find the right certification. We find those teachers that are going to be able to help us. So as of today, we've had over 1,600 register, and we have 1,021 who have indicated they want on-site instruction. So there is a large contingency out there for people right now, that could change, but right now, that want on-site instruction. So we gotta make sure that we do that well. And then for those that have indicated they want e-learning or virtual learning, then we have to figure out how we're going to staff that. There's been lots of questions about AP classes, and it all depends on how the scheduling works out and how many people have registered. For instance, if you only have 3 people register for an AP class, that may not work out. Whereas if you have 30 students that have registered for an AP class, then that helps us a little bit with being able to find the staffing for that. So we're gonna have to use wisely our resources, is what I'm trying to say as we get into staffing. So the update plan includes an e-learning option, and what I'm recommending to the board is authorizing the administration to move forward with using our registration numbers when it's finished to create the proper schedules for on-site instruction, virtual learning, and which is continuous learning per the IDOE, and an e-learning option for those parents that, and students that don't want to be on site. And also authorizing the administration to staff that those programs appropriately based upon the registration numbers. The second piece of the update from the e-learning plan, or from the, I'm sorry, for the reopening plan, as you all heard today, and we were expecting it last week, but it happened today, the mandate for masks. The governor has announced an executive order where masks are going to be required of all children in grades 3 through 12, and all staff members, unless they have a medical qualifying event, or there are other exceptions built into that. But so this plan indicates that there is mandatory mask wearing grades 3 through 12 per Governor Holcomb's executive order, and grades K through 2, we would follow the recommendations from the executive order. And that's why it does say in the plan, if you've read it, with the mask protocols, that anything that is mandated might get adjusted, then we need to adjust those. I'm pretty sure between now and August 3rd, our next meeting, things will change again. Guidance will change again. So I know everybody wants to know right now, what does this look like? What does this look like? What does this look like? First, we have to get registration done. Once we get registration done and we get all students to indicate on-site, e-learning, virtual, then we're gonna spend the next couple of weeks, the guidance counselors, the administrators, our special ed director, and all hands on deck to put as much time and effort as we can to determine what kind of staffing do we need on site, what kind of staffing do we need for e-learning, what kind of staffing do we need for virtual option. And then once we get that done, then we'll be able to release those schedules. And I'm aiming towards August 3rd, the week of August 3rd, not August 3rd, but the week of August 3rd. Let me say that again, the week of August 3rd, because people sometimes hang on a date, and I'm saying within that week, it's our hope to be able to release those schedules. And as we've been asked several times, well, once e-learning starts, what if I don't like it? Or once on-site instruction starts, what if I don't like it? Well, if you read carefully into the plan, one of the things we have adjusted is we're going to give everyone a 2-week option. Once school starts, you'll have 2 weeks to decide whether or not you want to jump back and forth. Now, talk about a nightmare of scheduling, but to the credit of our teachers association, to our guidance counselors at the high school, we all believe that you all need to be given a chance to see what does it look like on site, what does it look like online, and after school starts, you will have 2 weeks to jump in and out of whatever you have chosen. So if you chose on site and you decide I prefer my student to be online, then you'll be able to do that within the 2-week period after school starts. Same thing for if you chose e-learning and you want to jump to on-site, You'll have that two-week period to make that adjustment. We're trying to make it as flexible and as fluid as we can. After that, then elementary would need to stay put in e-learning for 9 weeks, and every 9 weeks you could reconsider, do I want to go on-site or stay with e-learning? Same thing for the on-site, I'm sorry, that's just for e-learning. In the high school, it would be for a semester. So if you choose e-learning after the 2 weeks, then you would need to stay in e-learning for that semester so that we can make sure that we have the proper staffing. So those are the updates. And also, I think it's on the agenda, authorization to adjust the plan as necessary moving forward in case we get additional mandates, we get additional requirements, or if we find we need more time and we need to make some calendar adjustments. So all of those are on our radar, and that's where we are right now. And I appreciate everyone's patience. I appreciate everyone's kindness. I appreciate everyone's civility. And this is not an easy situation that any school district's in, but as I've heard said, many times we're all in this together. And as was quoted from the LSC board member, it's time for all of us to act that way. We're all in this together. Let's support each other. Let's try to help each other. And things are evolving. What is true today probably will be different in 2 weeks. So stay tuned, but we're getting good registration numbers, and we got to get through that process. And then by the week of August 3rd, we'll be able, hopefully, to release those schedules and the staffing and how that will look.
Thank you, Rocky. And before we begin to have public comment, I need a motion to accept the reopening plan revision.
So moved. Second.
By Mrs. Witt, second by Mr. Marley. And now we will have discussion among the board after we hear from, we have a few people that would like to speak today. And just a couple things, as you approach, and we'll have you come here, and obviously from that standpoint, you'll be plenty of distance away from us, which is fine. But we want to thank you first all for taking the time, just like Rocky said, to attend today. It's been a difficult time for everybody. During the public comment section, there's a couple basic rules, which if you were here last time, you may have heard me say. One, we ask that you keep all your comments brief, with none lasting more than 3 minutes. Secondly, we also ask that you don't repeat comments that have been made by others, if you can avoid it. We will not answer questions during the public comments, but we will certainly take your comments down as they go, and take good notes from that standpoint. And the reasons why we don't answer questions during this part of the meeting are really twofold. Sometimes questions are personal in nature, and it's not appropriate to answer these questions publicly. Secondly, sometimes with certain questions, and especially in this COVID-19 era when everything is a moving target, we may not be prepared to give you an answer at this moment. So that's the second reason. Important point, that we will be happy to answer any individual questions, as Dr. Killian, myself, and Dr. Springer will remain after adjournment. And Rocky has answered, as many board members have as well, a number of emails. We're trying to be as responsive as we can. And I think that his phone is always, you can always call him and talk to him directly as well. So that's very, very important to us as a board, that we're answering your questions the best we can. And as Rocky kind of alluded to this, really now is the time. I mean, there's no greater time for all of us to work together and make this the best possible situation for our kids. We are who we are in our lowest and most challenging moments, and we all know this is one of these times. So we really thank you for all of your responses, the well-written, well-thought letters, the fact that many of you, after we respond, say thank you for your response is important. We don't expect that always to happen, because you may not like the answer. We understand that. But we do appreciate the civility that Rocky had talked about. It's essential here as we move forward during this process. So I'm going to go ahead and start with the first person on the list, which is Matthew Kane. And if I mispronounce your name, I am very sorry. But Matthew, you are up. You may.
Yeah. My name is Matthew Kane.
Hang on, let's make sure your mic is on. We want everyone to hear you. Need some help, Mrs. Cesaris? Okay, great, thank you.
My name is Matthew Kane. I'm a junior at the high school. I'm here today to ask you to allow us to go to school in person 5 days a week. Getting an education is extremely important to both me and my classmates, as you are all well aware. Unfortunately, we didn't receive much of an education last spring due to the constraints of e-learning, despite the truly above and beyond work of our teachers. My learning suffered due to these constraints in every class. In German, the amount of spoken German heard decreased from 250 minutes a week to only 60, and the amount of German I got to speak was reduced to roughly 4 sentences a week. In engineering class, all my hands-on projects we were supposed to do ended up being canceled. In band, I didn't get to play my instrument. In chemistry, I was unable to complete my semester-long project in the lab. And although it pains me to say this, my learning suffered without math tests and pop quizzes in English. Despite the extraordinary effort of my teachers, my learning was diminished due to these constraints. I have heard concerns over whether my classmates and I will follow protocols. Obviously, our personal responsibility is essential to reopening school. You know all of you have worked with my classmates and me. You know how intelligent we are, you know how selfless we are, and you know how much we care for our teachers. As such, I can promise you that we will act responsibly, we will wear masks, we will practice social distancing, we will stay home when we are sick, and we will follow our teachers' orders regarding safety procedures. Thank you for taking the time to listen to me and for all the extra work you've put into my going to school in person in reality.
Thank you, Matthew. Next up, Randy Stute.
It's hard to follow a student who is so articulate, and especially one of them that I love. The first thing I want to say is you're absolutely right. Changing conditions require flexibility, require us all to do that, and I'm really appreciative of the work that's gone into trying to make the changes we needed to do from 2 weeks ago. So thank you very much for that. And I would encourage parents and students to also have patience, not just with you, the board, and the administration, but also with teachers. We are going to be given a task to try to create an online experience that would normally be created over a decade or a year or something of the sort with cooperation. That's going to be tough. I would urge the board to consider that an extra week of delay to give us that opportunity to get that done. And I realize part of it will be driven by whether we're doing scheduling, but it's almost a miracle to do what you're going to ask Libby to do. In addition to that, I would urge parents to get signed up. We cannot do what we need to do. You cannot do what you need to do if they don't get those things done by the end of this week. And I believe the deadline is Friday, is that correct?
That's what we asked, yes.
Well, they need, and I realize it's a tough decision, but you've given them an opportunity also to go back and forth. So that's important. And I will also thank you that you already had added a mask requirement into the, and it, actually that's what I heard you say 2 weeks ago when you said any place we can't socially distance, because this is not possible. This room is wonderful. My classroom's about, you know, a tenth of this, and there's no way to socially distance 25 kids in that. So I appreciate what the governor did today. I hope we can all do this. And my feeling is from the beginning, if we could do something like mask up devils or do some kind of, let's make, this kid just said he's willing and his friends are willing to follow the rules. And I trust him to enforce it better than I can, because they want to be here. They want to be here, and they know they're smart kids. I think we should trust them, but we as adults in this community and across the river where I live all need to realize it's up to us to make that difference, to try to knock down the curve, too. We have 3 more weeks, hopefully maybe 4, to try to get that done. Thank you.
Thank you, Randy. Next up, Joel Strode. And just so you know the list, Mary Dell, you are on deck.
All right.
I'm trying to be efficient here, so.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. And my name is Joel Strode. I'm the athletics director at West Lafayette Junior Senior High School. kind of a unique opportunity for us this summer. We're the first to kind of get back into action before the students arrive back at school. So starting July 6th, we had our re-entry plan to athletics. That plan was created with the help of our partners at Franciscan Health, guidance from the IHSAA, and the guidance from the state, the governor, and of course, DOE. With that, I wanted to share to the board and the community that our plan was more conservative than required. So a few things that have been happening at our workouts and practice: temperature screenings for all the student athletes. When they arrive at practice, they do a QR code on their phone, answer some screening questions. All of our coaches are in masks. Our student athletes are wearing masks when possible, obviously, in participation. There are certain times when that's not possible. But all of those things are kind of extra and additional and wouldn't be possible, one, without our athletic trainers who are at all of these workouts assisting us, and the QR code that they came up with, and so on, to make sure that these things are possible and make sure we're keeping things as safe as we can for our school district, our student athletes, and even more our community. And with that, we haven't really had any major issues, right? We're 2 weeks in. There's been a few positive findings on our QR code. And what that means is a student athlete might come to practice and say, oh, they had a cough, or if they had a sore throat. And then with that sends us kind of into a protocol where we're on the phone with our doctors, right? Our school physicians, Dr. Chet Ho, Dr. Andrew Biancoli, and those are the people that we're leaning on. Those are the people that we're relying on to get us through this. I don't want coaches or the community or the board to think that I'm playing doctor at night. Very, very much not qualified to do that, but we're fortunate that we have those professionals to work with. And with that, and the sore throats and the coughs and so on, the doctors are saying those are things that happen with allergies and everything else. But we're treating those cautiously. They're going into a protocol. They're getting tested. They're quarantining, depending on what the docs say. And we're going to continue to lean on them for guidance and get us through this. And so far, really, really great results. And the community and our student athletes and our coaches, I think, are appreciating it. I think if anything, from this past spring, we learned that public education is so much more than just the education part. It's more than mathematics and English and science, with of course mathematics being first there. but we learned that so much more. Athletics is a major part of that. Our music programs at the junior senior high school are exceptional. Our clubs, our students are so involved, and I think the way for us to do that is to continue to proceed cautiously but safely. And I think kind of what we're doing this summer, I've been telling our coaches, and they've bought into this big time, that our goal is to get to the start of the school year. Right? That's what we were saying a few weeks ago. And I think things are going well. We don't want to be the cause of some major outbreak or crisis. We want to get to the start of the school year. And then the next goal is we want to get to our competition season. And we're going to continue to do things conservatively and cautiously so that we can be a part of getting to the start of school year and then getting to our competition season. So thank you.
Thank you, Gil. All right, Mary Dale, you're up, and Gretchen, you are on deck.
Hey, so thank you for your tireless efforts on our behalf and the collaborative spirit with which you have worked with us and the changes you have been willing to implement. As Taylor Molly once said, it's okay to change your mind. It shows you have one, right? This is an ongoing fluid process, as you said. With the COVID cases spiking and no vaccine yet, closing schools and offering e-learning makes logical sense on paper. In fact, to some, it might seem to be a no-brainer. However, if we were to do that, we'd have to concede that more than a third of our students would not learn. And we're not talking about a premium product that on-site instruction offers versus e-learning. We're talking about not learning. Online does not work for students with special needs, English language learners, at-risk students whose parents are working 2 to 3 jobs to make ends meet and aren't around to get them online, and our youngest students, who according to the law would be expected to sit before a laptop for as many as 5 hours. So allowing for choice is the better option. Your faculty who are most at risk hopefully can teach from home. Those willing to risk, and it is a risk, should have the best PPE and practices in place to do so as safely as possible, and we've been working hard on that end. We appreciate it. I plan to go in with a mask under a face shield, be like Darth Vader. I was going to do an impression for you, but my husband made me promise not to. In conclusion, no plan is perfect, but this revised plan accommodates most people possible. We should remember that our greatest strength is when we work together to address our challenges. And in this case, the enemy is not those with whom we disagree. The enemy is COVID-19. Thank you.
Thank you. Gretchen, you're up. And then after that, it was Zhao Min. If I pronounce that even close to being correct, I hope.
Good evening. My name is Gretchen Bauman, and I'm a rising senior and one of three captains on the girls' soccer team. I'm here tonight to expound upon what Mr. Strode said and to advocate for having a fall sports season. I believe that high school sports add irreplaceable value to our community and school. First, soccer and all high school sports teach teenagers how to lead. At the beginning of this summer, my team did not have a coach. I and the other seniors created workouts and met virtually to prepare our teammates for this season. This is just one example of the many instances in which soccer has allowed me to gain leadership skills. Secondly, soccer has given me confidence. I can unequivocally say that 4 years ago, I would not have had the courage to give a speech like this. But because of soccer, I've grown into a person capable of unreservedly expressing my own opinions. Thirdly, one of the most important aspects of soccer is my team. I'm involved in many different clubs and activities outside of soccer, yet the community found in my soccer team is like nothing else I've ever experienced at Westside. After spending months isolated in our homes, I believe it is more important than ever that we have this community. Not only does this advance social maturation, it allows us to learn to respect others who may have different backgrounds, family lives, or even athletic abilities. This ability to respect others is invaluable in our increasingly polarized world. Finally, to address the safety issue, I can only speak for my sport, but I do feel safe at practice. We wear masks until we begin warm-ups, and we are spaced out at all times during practice, even during water breaks. I believe that this season can happen safely, and I hope that it is allowed to. I know that I'm a better person because of soccer. This season should happen, not just for the soccer aspect, but so that I and my teammates can continue to grow both as soccer players and as individuals. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Gretchen. Zhao Min, if that's you're up next, I know you spoke about them. Jeff Kaiser, you are on deck.
My name is Xiaomi Chen, and I was here for the last meeting. And thank you so much for the board to take consider parents' suggestions and comments, and then come up with this revised draft plan. And today, I would like to talk about extracurricular activities for students. And I know there are extracurricular activities like math team and the language club and the debate team, which are possible to be delivered virtually to those students who choose e-learning. And I know many kids, they spend the whole semester, the whole year, to prepare this competition. And I'm sure they don't want to be, you know, take off this opportunity just because of they put peers in the first place, choose e-learning. So I personally suggest, is that possible to add like a webcam to the classroom? This may not significantly increase teachers' workload, but still can, you know, let e-learning students to access those class activities. And also, the last time we talked about like FERBA, consider some concerns about that. And actually, FERBA is for education records. And Department of Education released, I think in March, there's a presentation about FERBA and e-learning during COVID-19 period. And they said, I can read that, FERPA allows classes to be recorded and to be streamed live to off-site students. So this is just my personal suggestion. And thank you so much for considering parents' suggestions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for addressing this.
Can I say something?
Yeah, you may. Go ahead.
Two things. One, if you read in the plan, any club or activity that can be offered virtually, it's in the plan that students that are in e-learning can participate. That was added to the plan, and that is in the plan. With regards to FERPA, the issue comes into play when you have a special education student, when you have an autistic student, when you have something that happens in the classroom, or you have a parent that has said, I don't want my child's face, I don't want my child's name to be broadcast because maybe there's a restraining order, there's a domestic dispute, there's a legal issue. Those things put the kids in jeopardy. So broadcasting a live feed of an on-site class to people that are offline causes a lot of legal issues. And it also causes contractual issues, in my opinion, with our teachers, because if they have to discipline a student and it's recorded and a parent doesn't like how the teacher handled it, even though it was handled appropriately, there are liability and contractual issues with teachers. So we look closely at that, and there's all kinds of opinions. For every opinion that you can find online, I'm pretty sure that I can find the opposite opinion online. So, or you can call and talk to various lawyers, right, Bob? So we do offer, it's in the plan, if you have, if the teacher or sponsor can do the club virtually, then students that are doing e-learning can participate in that club or that activity. That is part of the plan. So I just want to make sure that you all knew that.
Okay, thank you. Jeff Kaiser, if I pronounced that right. And then Alice, you are on deck.
Actually, it's pronounced Kaiser.
My apologies.
Future reference. So I guess my understanding is approximately 40% of students are expressing that they're desiring some kind of online option. And it, to me, from I guess what's been stated, it sounds like that entire option is being planned within the next maybe 2 or 3 weeks. I guess I don't know, this is more of a concern than a question, but it seems like the schools were closed in March 19th by the governor. To me, that seems like when this sort of planning would start to happen, I guess at least as a contingency. So I guess my question is, are you starting to think about what's going to happen if there's an outbreak or positive cases? Like, could the e-learning absorb more people? Like, let's say that, I don't know, an outbreak happens and one entire school has to be closed down. Can the e-learning option support that scenario? And I mean, I would say at least consider that when you're considering these funds.
Now let me answer that question. If schools close down, teachers will be available to e-learn. I mean, that's the reality of it. Why wasn't planning happening in April or May? Because the governor said he wasn't going to make an announcement about public schools until July. And so whatever plan we came up with, whatever it might be, we didn't have registration numbers, we didn't have idea of what the governor was going to announce, what waivers, if anything, was going to happen, what guidance we were going to get. Of course, he moved the announcement up earlier, which helped us. And then we were told that we had to get our local healthy county, local health department officials to go over the plan and review it. So that took time because they had to review it. They don't have to approve it, but they had to review it. So we're in the midst of, you have to do A, B, C, and D before you can get to E. And so that's the reason some of this has happened. But if school closes down, we'll flip a switch and we have to go to e-learning, much like what the governor made us do back in the end of February, 1st of March.
But as another student had just said, that was pretty non-ideal. I guess I would urge to maybe...
What do you want me to do?
Yeah.
We're either going to have to, if they tell us to shut down, we shut down. If we don't shut down, then we'll provide on-site instruction. I mean, that's...
I guess what I'd want you to do is, like, plan for that actually happening, and maybe then instead of scrambling at the last minute, we can figure out maybe something a little bit more ideal.
Well, that's what we're working on with our teachers and what we're trying to work on with the plans that we've developed, and everyone wants everything, people over here to over here. So we're doing the best we can with the staffing and the resources that we have, and appreciate everyone's patience.
Okay. And I would like, it doesn't have to be answered now, but I would like to hear what would happen if like a positive case happens, because particularly in the junior high school, one student is going to, I don't know, 6 or 8 different places throughout the day. And if they do test positive, the test results now in this locality are taking up to upwards of 2 weeks to get back. So they could have been, you know, asymptomatically spreading for up to 2 weeks before this positive result came back. So just the, you know, modeling that spread could be pretty difficult. Like, they could be coming into contact with hundreds of people, hundreds of other students, teachers, faculty, staff in that time. So I'm curious to see how that would be handled as well.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah, appreciate it. Alice, you are up next, and David Jost is after that.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Good. My name's Alice Pauly. I'm the parent of a rising third grader, a faculty member at Purdue contemplating how I'm supposed to teach, and president of Purdue's chapter for the American Association of University Professors. So we're facing lots of similar challenges in our classrooms over at Purdue. So I want to appreciate how difficult these circumstances are, appreciate your time and attention, and particularly thank you for the e-learning option without medical need, which I'm going to take advantage of for my third grader. I have a few questions. Will the portion of students who are choosing e-learning make it easier for kids who need face-to-face to have social distancing in classrooms? Will face-to-face classrooms be de-densified, or will the decreased load of kids in face-to-face environments just result in fewer classrooms filled with the normal number of students per class? What is the plan to protect substitute teachers, given that they would be exposed to different kids every day that they work, with, I think, limited health insurance options? How involved were teachers themselves or the Indiana State Teachers Association in putting together the school cooperation plan? I really appreciate hearing that you were involving them, but do they get to vote on the plan? I'd like to know. Is it a priority to use West Lafayette teachers to be the ones teaching e-learning, the e-learning option? Or, in other words, will you outsource only if there are not enough West Lafayette teachers available? And do individual teachers have control over how they organize their day of e-learning, or is that organized centrally? In other words, do individual teachers have autonomy to decide how to organize their 5 hours of e-learning? Well, 5 hours, because I'm dealing with elementary school. Finally, how will the school corporation be assessing whether any of these necessary important changes to public schooling result in perpetuating or worse, exacerbating racial inequalities in our schools? Thank you all for your time.
Thank you. All right. David, you're up. And then Josh and Linda would be on deck.
Good evening. My name is David Jost. I'm a social studies teacher in the junior senior high, and I also serve as the head coach for the boys and girls cross country teams. First, I'd like to say how proud I am to work in a district where the superintendent and school board president are among the first to jump in to clean up chairs at graduation. Friday's graduation epitomized the school board, administration, staff, students, and families' potential to work together to make the best of a tough situation. I believe this type of creativity and teamwork will be the key to an unquestionably unique school year together. My purpose for addressing the board this evening is to ask for your continued leadership in developing creative solutions to provide the best possible educational opportunities for our students, including education-based athletics. I firmly believe student athletes are students before they're athletes, as I'm a teacher before I'm a coach. That being said, the risks associated with school attendance and athletics are different presently. I ask for your thoughtful consideration of that reality and to continue to avoid taking an arbitrary one-size-fits-all approach as you lead us into the fall. As athletics are optional, students and parents have the ability to participate at their discretion. I understand the decisions for widespread closure made at the state level last spring, given the novel nature of the virus. There may be a time when that's necessary again, but thankfully we do know at least a little bit more now than we did at that point in time. I ask that we use the best science and data available to guide our decisions to open when appropriate not just to close, even though in many cases that would probably be easier. The cross-country team has been meeting for 2.5 weeks in accordance with guidance from state and local health officials and our administration. A large portion of my time coaching this summer has been forming and administering COVID-related plans. It's been worth it, though, to provide an opportunity for student-athletes to voluntarily come together to work toward a common goal, as well as personal improvement. Things don't look quite the same as they did before, but student-athletes and coaches are very much enjoying the sense of community and normalcy. We must continue to balance student physical, mental, and emotional health as we continue to make decisions for the coming year. Thanks for your consideration.
Thank you, David. Josh and Linda are together, that'd be fine. And then Ninghui, N-I-N-G-H-U-I, you are on deck. And I apologize.
Linda Procopy, and we have 3 children in the junior senior high school who really want to be back in school, but we picked the online option before the governor's mask mandate. So, but I'm looking for some clarity on masks. So I was excited to come in here tonight and see all the masks on, but masks keep coming off, and some masks are below noses. And I don't feel safe sending my children to school in that situation. At Purdue, we have to teach wearing a mask, right? So if we're at the microphone, we're wearing a mask. So I'm hoping there can be some clarity on that, and the answer is that masks are always on and they don't come off when people are speaking or whatever else they're doing. But I need that. I just need to know that for my own peace of mind, sending my children back to school.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi. This is a very quick question, kind of playing off something that was said earlier. And I understand the answer about recording, why that wouldn't be possible. It makes perfect sense. In the case of classes where there was a very low sign up for online option, some of the AP classes perhaps, would there ever be a possibility of students joining the on-site class via Zoom or GoTo meeting? Just an idea to throw out. If it's the answer is no, that's it. I understand.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Ninghui, I apologize if I miss it. And Tony, you are on deck.
First, I would like to say thank you for adding the flexibility of online learning. And the main reason I signed up is to want to ask about the timeline of the scheduling information, which has already been answered. So I just want to add a point. So essentially, at this point, our society have a sort of total limit in terms of physical contact. If there's too much, then we'll see exponential growth. So I understand that many students want to get back to study, and many families cannot afford to have the kids remain at school. So in that sense, the family who choose to have e-learning, who can afford to have kids at home, are essentially reducing the total amount of in-person interaction. So in a sense, sort of leaving the necessary social good for others.
Thank you. Tony? And then Salu, S-A-I-L-U, you be last and on deck.
Hi, I'm Tony Rogat, and I'm a parent of an incoming sixth grader. And as a district parent, I'm really just trying to make the best instructional decision for my child for the coming year. And I think about both the health and safety data that are coming out, and also as much information as I can get about the curriculum that are going to be offered. And I'm thinking particularly about communication information related to the e-learning platform. It sounds like there may be the potential to learn more and more as specifics are being decided, and with the 2 weeks time to make a switch in decisions, it sounds like parents can continue to be informed, which I really do appreciate. The kinds of information I might use to make that kind of decision is both the kind of platform that e-learning might be taking place in, if any of the curriculum is being outsourced or other online companies are being used. I care a lot about the extent to which instruction might be synchronous, that is, my daughter having access to real-time instruction with a teacher. and the extent to it, what percentage of the day that might be occurring. And then I've been thinking a lot about the school board's role in providing resources in terms of best practices for e-learning for teachers as they either are coming back from retirement, this is potentially a new platform, et cetera, as we continue to try to integrate e-learning and non-instruction, thinking about professional development and other thinking together about resources that could really augment the quality of the e-learning experience for our children. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Salu? Anybody else? S-A-I-L-U? Okay. Not here. So we thank you for your for the public comment of this. We'll go now to discussion. We have a motion on the table and a second discussion, and I'll start with Rachel. Your hand went up first, and then Tom.
Dr. Killian, of the 1,600 who have responded, what percentage does that amount to of our total population?
I was never really good at math. So we're at about 65 to 67%.
Okay. I'm sorry. Okay, Tom, I mean you.
Some of this has been said, but just from my perspective, nothing about this is easy. There's no manual or textbook that tells us what to do. There are guidelines, the recommendations from medical experts. I think we followed those very well. I just want to acknowledge the administrative team from Rocky, the principals, and many others who've gotten us to this point. In addition to their efforts, there's been a lot of work done by our teachers. That work actually started last spring, trying to figure out how to best teach in this environment. Community members, this has been mentioned, that have reached out, it's been great. Comments, feedback. And just everyone know that, I know to a person up here, safety is number one, always will be. Students, teachers, staff, the community, I think we're in a good place. Right behind that is a positive experience for every student, regardless what method is chosen. Again, I think we're in a good place. Who knows what tomorrow will bring or next week. I think, as we sit here today on July 22nd, we're in a good position. I just need to acknowledge a lot of work under this way back in March and April. This did not just start 2 weeks ago or a month ago. I know a lot of teachers that have been on my back porch over the spring and summer trying to figure out lots of different plans. So there's a lot of work being done for our community as it should be, and so I acknowledge that.
Yeah. Other comments, anything else down the line?
And I think I'll also add to what Tom said too, that safety it is our number one goal here. We have a great school district. We're very fortunate to have all of you that would take the time to come here. And yet we also know that this is your kids. And this is your kids whether you're a teacher, this is your kids whether you're a parent. And so I think that's an important thing. But I think one of the other things that's been good, if there's been anything good that's happened in the last period of time, is that I see some signs that we're listening, and I think that's a good thing. We're listening, trying to react, and we don't ever like to be in lose-lose situations, and sometimes this really feels like that, and yet we also have to deal with what we're dealt with. And I think that that's the thing that I'm from my perspective, because this has been a daily occurrence for every board member here, where we're looking at that, and that's what we signed up for. So make no mistake, we're not complaining. This is our time to do our best, and we want to be at our best in this situation. But the good things I have noticed that's been very, very important is that we have done, I have seen a district from stakeholders to our teachers, our staff, that are trying to listen and have we have to have our heart in the right place, no question. We also have to have our minds engaged, make the best decisions, and that's what we're doing. But we appreciate all the comments and all the very, very well-written letters that I've received as well. I appreciate those very much. So, any other comments from our group? Okay, we'll take all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, that motion for the reopening plan revisions does in fact carry. So thank you. Now we'll move on to the superintendent authorization for plan changes, and I need a motion, please.
So moved.
And Karen, why don't you read the motion as well?
To motion that the board allow the superintendent and his designee, meaning the administration, be authorized to amend and implement any changes to the plan as a result of input received from the governor, Indiana Department of Education, Indiana Department of Health, and the Tippecanoe County Health Department without board approval. This also includes, but is not limited to, adjustments to the school calendar and school schedules. And just to clarify, this is a common authorization that school boards are giving their superintendents and designees, as we've seen tonight with constantly changing mandates, the governor's mandate, for example. So we want to give our superintendent and administrative some flexibility as we move forward.
Okay. That motion is by Dr. Springer, second by Brad Marley. Discussion, please. Comments. And mind you, too, that we will have another board meeting here in a couple of weeks as well. So, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
And opposed? Hearing none, this motion does carry. Thank you. So our future regular school board meeting again, Monday, August 3rd. 6:30 p.m. Location, maybe depend a little bit on the situation. It will be not determined whether it will be here.
More likely here.
Probably here, just because it's easier to have distance and have folks.
I'm sure something's going to change between now and then.
That'll be Monday, August 3rd, 6:30 p.m. in our regular board meeting. I need a motion for adjournment, please.
Before you do that, you want to remind folks if you have individual questions that you would like to have answered, I'm willing to stay back, try to answer as many as I can for you. I may not have all the answers for you, but if you have an individual question or questions that are burning on your heart, you want to have a conversation, I'd be happy to stay back as long as I need to make that happen.
Okay, thank you. Need a motion for adjournment, please?
So moved.
Moved by Melissa.
Second.
Second by Tom Schott. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
And opposed? The motion carries. The meeting is adjourned. Please be well and healthy here in the next couple of weeks, and thank you for attending.